We ended up getting kind of close to the exit ramp from where you would get off the highway to go to my hotel. I was staying at the Excalibur, and I told the driver, "You know what? Just let me out here. I'll just take care of it from here."
The Diz Runs With podcast, episode 297, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to the Diz Runs With podcast, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So let's get started. Hey guys, real quick before we dive into today's episode, just want to let you know that I recently updated the coaching page on my website. So if you're thinking about possibly getting a coach, or maybe you're wondering what some of the benefits are of working with a coach, you know, maybe that's something that hasn't even crossed your mind yet. Why don't you head over to dizruns.com/coaching? No pressure. Obviously, I you know by now that I'm not a high pressure person, but check it out. You can get some insight on kind of some of the benefits that a coach can provide, and you know, maybe some of the reasons that you might consider possibly wanting to work with a coach beyond just during a training cycle leading up to a race, because there's a lot of benefits and a lot of things to be gained by working with someone and having a consistent and long-term view of your training beyond just the 16 or 18 weeks leading up to a race. So check it out. I talk about the Coterie a lot, but there's some other options available as well. So dizruns.com/coaching. And as always, if you have any questions about any of the coaching options that I have available, please let me know and I'll do my best to answer them for you in a non-pressure kind of way. So with that, let's get on with today's episode of the show. Hey guys, my partner in crime for today's run is someone that I'm looking forward to learning quite a bit from, as he's well in front of me on several of my big running goals. When it comes to racing and traveling, he's got his sights set on some pretty impressive goals, including a half marathon in every state, a half marathon in each Canadian province, a marathon on every continent, and running a race in a place that starts with every letter of the alphabet. In addition to his running exploits, he's also written 4 books about his adventures traveling and running in different parts of the country. I'm looking forward to soaking up lots of insight during our chat today, and I'm excited to share a few miles with Mr. Tom Letty. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thanks, Danny.
Guys, if you haven't checked out Tom's blog, and it's a great resource, especially if you're into the travel running and the racecationing and all that kind of good stuff, head over to runsandplaces.com, all spelled out just like it sounds, runsandplaces.com. And you can connect with Tom on Instagram and or Twitter with the same handle in both places. And the handle there is @TomRuns_262. And I'll have those links to connect with Tom and his blog and anything else that we talk about that makes sense today in the show notes for this episode, which you'll be able to find at dizruns.com/297. So Tom, the way we always start things off on the show is with a pretty, what I think is a pretty simple and straightforward question. However, the answer is not always as simple and straightforward as the question is. But that's just to ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
So my favorite distance to race is probably half marathons. I really enjoy running full marathons as well, but I like the fact that the training isn't quite as intense for a half and the recovery time is a lot shorter, so I can run a lot more of them over the course of a year. So typically I'll try to do, you know, 7 to 8 half marathons, and then along with 1 to 2 marathons every year.
Gotcha. Do you tend to do, I know some people that do the you know, marathons and schedule a couple of half marathons as part of the training. Do you do that, or do you kind of block them differently? Or I mean, obviously if you're going to do that many races, you're probably going to have some overlap in your cycles.
Yeah, there's a little bit of overlap, but actually that is what I try to do generally, where if I've got a 13-mile run planned on a certain weekend anyway, I'll schedule, if there's a half that's convenient to do, I'll schedule it and kind of use that as like a tune-up run so that I can make sure that I'm hitting the pace that I want to be hitting or whatever. But every now and then there's a race that I really want to run and it doesn't always fit exactly in with my training, and I'll just figure out how to make the adjustments to deal with it. So,
yeah. Well, one thing that I've thought about doing, and it just hasn't, you know, like you said, sometimes it has to fit the schedule and it doesn't always work out like that. But I've always liked the idea of when you have a, you know, a 17 or a 20 mile or something like that, that isn't the most exciting training run to get up for early on a Saturday morning. To have a race on you know, on one of those days and go out and do 5 or 6 miles before the half marathon and then run the half marathon, which would motivate at least me to, you know, keep the pedal down a little bit, or keep the focus, or whatever you want to call it, for that last, you know, 3 or 4 miles of the half, which ends up being, you know, mile 16 through mile 20 or something like that of a training run. Have you done something like that before?
I have. And, you know, I'm glad you said to run the first few miles before, because I think it only works if you do it that way, because I've tried to do it a couple times the opposite, where, you know, I'll do the half and then I'll go home and run a few extra miles or something. And by the time you're done with the race, you don't care about running anymore. But I have actually done like what you said, where you run a few miles ahead of time and then, you know, kind of get to the start of the race and run from there. So.
How does that differ, I guess, between, besides just the obvious that, you know, you're already, you know, a handful of miles deep before the race starts, but mentally, is there a big difference for you between that and if you're just doing a half marathon, you know, kind of standalone?
Yeah, there is a difference, because if you're doing a half marathon standalone, when you start the race, the first few miles of it are, for me, they're, you know, it's like I'm trying to wake up my legs. Things are going a little bit slow. And when I get into it, you know, if I've got something, like you said, you're a few miles into it, so I'm, you know, the start goes a little bit more smooth. But then the other thing about the flip side of that is, halfway through the race or towards the end, you start to feel a lot more worn down, or you feel like you've been running a lot farther than you should have run for a half marathon. So it is a push, but the fact that it is a race and you've got other people around you and you know that you're running towards a finish line, it still helps to motivate you by being a race. So
yeah, that's kind of always the thought that I've had. And like I said, I haven't been able to put that into practice yet just because of logistics and whatnot. But there's, even though you know that you're not necessarily racing it as hard as you would, obviously, if it was a standalone, for me, at least, it would still motivate me to keep going between the other runners and even having just an official time. I mean, your official time is just going to say half marathon. So you got to, you know, for me, I'd want to keep that respectable. And so it helped me to dig a little bit deeper on those late miles.
Yeah, that is true.
What was your motivation or what was the reason behind getting into running for you? Has running always been something that you've done, or did that start a little bit later in life?
It started a little later in life, actually. And it's funny because a lot of people have asked me that question about, well, you know, were you on track or cross country or something in high school? And actually the answer is no. I was in fairly decent shape in high school. I played a couple sports, but running was not my strong point until after college. I got this, my first big job out of college. I had, my boss that I worked for was big time into running, and he used to go out and he'd run, you know, like 3 miles or so at lunchtime. And he, one day invited me to come running with him. And really it's the funniest story, cause I don't know, I've never heard anybody else with a story like this, that the reason I started running was because I wanted to impress my boss.
Yeah, that's a new one for me too.
Yeah, exactly. So I went out and ran with him at lunchtime and got up to the point, you know, at first I couldn't, you know, I could run maybe a half mile. I didn't know how to pace myself the right way or anything. And after, you know, slowly over several weeks and, you know, maybe a few months or whatever, I got up to the point where I was running 3 miles with him and keeping up with him and everything, and then decided to start doing some local 5Ks. And then from there started going for longer distances.
It's, I've heard a lot of folks that gets suckered into running by peer pressure, but definitely not the boss peer pressure. That's a different angle. You kind of don't have a choice at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
At what point though, did you set some of these big goals? Cause like I said in the intro, you've got some pretty, lofty goals that include a lot of travel, which is a cool thing as well. And I can't imagine that happened too early in the process, or at least right at the beginning. So at what point were you like, all right, you know, not only do I enjoy this running thing, but what an excuse or what a fun thing to do while I'm traveling as well.
Yeah. So when I first started racing, I did maybe, like I said, a few local 5Ks here and there. And at one point, I have a bunch of friends who live in Nashville and I'm from Chicago. So I went down to see them, and it happened to be that there was a half marathon that weekend too. So I signed up for the race a few months in advance, trained for it, and realized, so my first race was out of town. And then the second half marathon I did was also, it was in Phoenix, Arizona, which was same thing. I was visiting some friends and said, while I'm here, I might as well run since there's a race going on. And after a while, after about doing that two or three times, it kind of sunk in for me that, you know, when you do a race in a big city or out in a remote location or whatever it is, usually the course is designed specifically to show off some of the really impressive things about the area. So if it's a big city, maybe there's some monument or some impressive architecture or something you're going to run by. You know, if it's out in the middle of nowhere, maybe, you know, you're running by some interesting rock formations or, you know, a famous river or whatever. And I started to realize, well, you know, running and traveling are, running gives you a way to see things in a way that you wouldn't if you were just driving through the area in a car or something. So I started to put together all these longer goals of all the different places I wanted to run.
Which of your goals is, I don't know if scary is the right word, but maybe it is the most scary, or for you feels like maybe it's the most far-fetched or the hardest to achieve. You get what I'm trying to say? Like what's kind of your travel running goals is kind of like, whoa, like this one will be something.
So running on every continent is definitely one that is going to be probably the toughest, mainly because there's places like Antarctica that it's just to get there in the first place is rough. And then I don't know if you've heard this about there is a marathon in Antarctica, but one of the problems is there's not 26.2 miles of road. So the way that the race works is it's basically like a 3-mile loop that you have to run 8.5 times or something. So just running that, and it's cold and it's brutal. I mean, it's going to be rough. So, but I'm still looking forward to doing it.
have you in all your racing done any kind of looped ish courses?
The Mount Kilimanjaro Marathon in Tanzania is it's like basically a 10K loop that you run 4 times roughly with a little bit of extra in there. But that was a similar situation where Tanzania doesn't have a lot of roads, and the roads that they have aren't really in the best shape. So the course directors have to do what they can with what they have available. And I know the Mercedes Marathon in Birmingham, Alabama is like that too. I just did the half there, but if you do the full, it's just a double looped course.
Gotcha. Yeah. I've done a couple of marathons where it's, you know, like the half and the full are on the same course. And you basically for the full, just do that same course twice, which isn't the preferred, at least for me, not the preferred option, but it's not that bad. But that idea of doing, you know, even 4 almost sounds too much, but my gosh, if you had to get down to a 2 or 3 mile loop that you're doing, you know, 8, 10, 12 times, depending on what the math works out like that. I don't want to say no, I don't want to say never say never, but that doesn't sound like it'd be the optimal race experience for me.
Yeah. I'm going to say that's one of the things you want to do it, cause you want to run in Antarctica if that's what, you know, your goals is. And the only reason you would do that is to say that you've done it. I don't know that anyone would have ever like go out of their way to do something like that. So.
Yeah. Although I have talked to a couple of folks that have done races like that. And actually I think I talked to somebody that has done the Antarctica race before. And not so much for the Antarctica race, but with other opportunities where you're doing that type of a race, they've convinced me to at least keep my mind open to it because of the benefits of having, you know, you don't have to, you're not spread out. Like, you know, you're always kind of aid stations are always close if you want them to be, or you don't have to carry stuff. Like you don't have to worry about dropping a sweatshirt and never getting it back. Like you can just hold it for the half mile till you get back to kind of the start finish line and drop it there. And then you can pick it up at the end of the day. So, you know, I suppose there's some pros and cons to it, or there's some pros besides just the cons that stick out in my head right away. But, like I said, it's not the first thing on my list of choosing a race that I can like, oh, this is just a 2-mile loop that I can run 12 times. Like that's right. not high on the list.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So you mentioned the race in Tanzania. What was I mean, I've never been to Africa. I've never been outside of North America, and you know, unless you can count like day trips into Canada, you can almost say I've never really even done international travel. But what was it like to run a race in Africa in Tanzania? I got to imagine it was a pretty cool experience, but who knows? Maybe I'm mistaken there.
It was a very cool experience. And actually I met some local runners that I'm still friends with to this day. And that was a few years ago that I did it. It was kind of funny the way that it worked. So the race is open to people from the United States and Europe and wherever else you're from, Australia. Mm-hmm. And typically, if you're traveling from a different continent, there's an organization that puts together a travel package. So you'll pay for the race entry, the hotel, your flight, and whatever else you want to do. They'll have options. Like, so I went on a safari while I was there too, and but it'll all just be one cost, and it covers everything. And then it's also open to the local runners from Tanzania and also Kenya, which is right on the other side of Mount Kilimanjaro. So the two countries border each other. Well, interestingly enough, when you do a race in the United States, if you think about a big race like Chicago or Boston or New York or whatever, you've got all these super elite runners that are going to come up from the U.S. And you don't really see a lot of elite runners going to Africa to run. So, you know, we had a lot of like mid-pack runners, and the slowest Tanzanian runner finished the marathon an hour before the fastest American runner,
wow.
Which I thought was pretty funny. So, and some of these guys ran it barefoot too, which was even funnier. But the experience was great, and the scenery was beautiful. It was actually one of those things where if I had to do a race that was like a multi-looped course like that, because it was so beautiful, that was the one to do because I didn't mind looking at some of that stuff multiple times. And then, like I said, it included a safari, the whole trip, got the whole experience of hanging out in Moshi and meeting some of the locals. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. That sounds like it's kind of one of those, I don't know if once in a lifetime is quite the right way to say it, but certainly, you know, if you have the opportunity, and it works out logistic wise, like jump at it, because that would be something that I'm sure you'll never forget race wise. And it'll be hard to find something that lives up to that. Just because of the whole experience, you know, here, you know, staying quote unquote locally in the United States or whatever.
Yeah, it is hard to top that one for sure.
So then Africa and obviously United States, have you done any other continents on that trip to seven continents yet? Or is that where we are right now with two continents?
Yeah, that's where we're at right now. I'm actually looking at Europe next year. So that'll be at three next year.
Gotcha. Any races in particular yet? Or are you just kind of eyeballing and seeing what fits the schedule?
So there's two that I definitely want to do, and they're both lotteries. So we'll see how we can get. One is the London Marathon, and the other one is Berlin. I believe there are some packages where you can get travel packages that get you a guaranteed entry. So still doing a little research on that. But those I actually both want to do. One because they're both part of the World Marathon Majors and just major beautiful cities in Europe to run.
Is the Marathon Majors, I feel like I remember, was that one of your goals too?
Yeah, it is actually. Yeah.
I'm assuming you've done Chicago since you live there. Yep. Have you done any of the other United States based majors yet?
I am doing New York this November, actually.
Oh, okay. So you'll be if the lottery balls bounce right, you'll be halfway done in about a year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's cool. So Chicago and some of the other races that you talked about, kind of bigger fields. Do you like running the races with obviously Chicago is huge, but do you like running races with several thousands of people, or are you a big races okay and small races okay kind of guy, or do you have a preference of race size?
There's pros and cons to both, and I think mentally you kind of prepare for them differently too. So Chicago, I do, you know, just like you said, being from Chicago, if I go for a run downtown on a Sunday morning on our lakefront trail, there's going to already be thousands of other runners. So I'm kind of used to running in that environment anyway. But at the same time, where I actually live is pretty far south of the city. It's actually technically as far south as you can go and still be part of the Chicago area. So I've also got, if I go the other direction and go for a long run, I've got some nice open trails that I can run on and some state parks that are fairly quiet and everything. So depending on where I'm going to be running, I'll do more of my training in, you know, one area or the other, just to get myself used to the amount of crowds or lack thereof. And I think it's hard to say which one is better, because I love looking at big city skylines and nice architecture and everything while I'm running. But I also like running out in the open and looking at canyons and rivers and streams and stuff too. So.
Well, and it's also nice in the smaller races, as far as numbers go, to be able to run more of your own race and not have to navigate a whole bunch of people and crowds and get sucked up. And like, I've had that before at a Disney race where everything feels good. I'm still early in the race. I look down at my watch and I'm going like a minute and a half or 2 minutes per mile faster than I want to be going, but I'm just get caught up in the crowd and you just start moving too fast. So have you had any issues with that at some of the bigger races?
I have, and I've actually had a few people warn me about that with New York, apparently, because the first mile or the first few miles of that are, you know, just everybody's going nuts. The crowds are there. Like you said, you end up getting caught up in all of it. And later on, that obviously that hurts you. So
right.
As whereas with the smaller races, it's more like a Zen feeling where there's not a huge crowd. You're out, you're hitting your pace that, you know, you want to beat, that you want to hit, that feels comfortable. You kind of get into that groove where you feel like, you can just kind of run forever and the scenery is beautiful and everything. And you don't really have that issue as much. I think you're right.
Yeah. It's like you said, there's pros and cons to either option. Cause sometimes I've had some of the smaller races too, where, all of a sudden you look up and you're kind of alone, and that not that it's a scary feeling, but it's harder to, at least for me, it can be a little bit harder to maintain your pace or a little bit harder to keep going when there's not people around you. So for me, kind of like that size where it spreads out after 5 or 6 miles and you can still run your own race, but you're never alone. Like that's the optimal number. So whatever number that ends up being, a few thousand, I think for me is about perfect. But you know, again, to each their own, and certainly they all have their pros and cons, just like everything else in life.
Exactly. I've actually got a funny story about that. I had a few years ago, I wanted to see if I could do 2 half marathons in 2 different states in the same day. Mm. So I did the Rock and Roll Las Vegas, which is in the evening, and the whole thing is you run down the strip at night, and you know, but it's a super crowded race.
I was going to say, like, I imagine that one's pretty crowded.
Yeah. But that same morning, there was a race in Las Cruces, New Mexico, that was, you're running out in the desert, and there were 500 runners in the whole race. So I did that one. And like you said, there were times where I was completely alone, and, you know, good thing I knew which direction the course was, or else I wandered out in the desert and got lost or whatever. But I get back, get cleaned up, jump on the plane, fly to Vegas. And I had a friend of mine who was meeting up with me to run the race in Vegas. So went over, found him at the start line. And one of the funniest things about when you run is, if you ever notice, you know, whatever percentage of runners you finish in, you know, there's going to be a certain percentage of runners that are faster than you. There's going to be a certain percentage of runners that are a little slower than you, whatever. So if you finish in the top 20%, you're probably going to finish in the top 20%, no matter how many people are in the race. So there were 500 runners. I finished like, you know, number 98 or something like that was my, for the first race. So I went back, and then I meet my friend, and there's, you know, 50,000 runners in Vegas. And he's like, "So how'd it go this morning?" I was like, "I was one of the top 100 finishers, man." You know? And he's like, "What, really?" You know? So it's fun.
Yeah. I love doing that for like age group stuff. Like, you know, if there might only be 3 people in your age group, and it's like, "Well, how'd it go?" "Well, you know, I placed in my age group," and like, "Oh, wow, that's so odd." But I never tell them. Like, I just keep my mouth shut about, there's only 2 of us in the age group. And so, you know, I finished last in my age group, but I still finished second, you know, like, no. You just top 3 in the age group. That's all you need to tell anybody.
Yep. Exactly.
So I can't let this 2 race in 2 different states on the same day thing pass without diving into that a little bit more. I've twice done 2 half marathons on the same day, but they were both fairly close, about 45-minute drive between the morning race and the evening race. So obviously the travel logistics for me were quite a bit different than they were for you. So how did the idea of doing the 2 in 2 different states kind of come about, and then how did the logistics of the travel and the planning, and like, I gotta imagine that was almost as much of a pain as that second race might have been. What was that whole day like for you?
So the way it came about was, actually I had wanted to do Rock and Roll Las Vegas a year earlier and ended up I just had too much going on with work. I couldn't train for it, and I ended up having to push it off by a year. So I kind of said, well, if I'm going to wait for this, then when I do get a chance to do it, I'm going to do something epic with it. So I figured, you know, let me find what other races I can do that morning or whatever, and found one in New Mexico that seemed to be close enough that I could do both of them. So I said, okay, this will be a good goal to shoot for. And then the way I trained for it was basically the same training schedule I would follow for a full marathon, but I split the runs in half. So if I was supposed to run 6 miles that day, I would go wake up in the morning before work and run 3 miles. And then at night I would run 3 more miles or whatever. So that it gave me basically equivalent to what I would be running or what it was going to feel like the day of the race.
Right. Yeah, that heavy leg feeling from after the first race to the second race.
Yeah, exactly. And so the logistics of it, I still had to go to Vegas and pick up my race number before the race. So what I ended up doing was booking a flight from Chicago, round trip from Chicago to Vegas, from like Thursday until Monday morning and just booked the hotel the whole time. Mm-hmm. Brought all my stuff, went and picked up my race number. And then Saturday I flew from Las Vegas to El Paso, Texas, because Las Cruces doesn't have an airport.
Just add one more variable to the mix of making this difficult. Okay.
Right. And, I left my hotel room, you know, I just didn't stay in it, but I left all my stuff except for what I needed exactly for both races. So mm-hmm. I brought my, race clothes, went in a small carry-on bag, flew to El Paso, drove 45 minutes to Las Cruces. Luckily it's not really that right. far of a drive. Picked up my race number for that, did the race the next morning, went back to my hotel, changed into my race outfit for the next race, and went back to the airport. And actually, it wasn't too bad because in between the races, I had time to eat, I had time to rehydrate, I had time to stretch, and people were looking at me like I was crazy because I was standing at the gate waiting to board the plane, stretching out my calves and quads and everything. And got on the plane, and the other thing that kind of worked in my favor was that there's an hour time difference between Las Vegas and Las Cruces. So I ended up gaining an hour on my way back. But then the plane was delayed by an hour. So it kind of canceled it out. So, and at first it said delayed indefinitely. So I was kind of worried that I was going to just completely miss it, but I got there just in time. And, luckily I only had the one carry-on bag. So got off the plane, ran down to a taxi, started heading towards my hotel, and got stuck in traffic because when you close down the entire strip in Las Vegas, it affects all of the traffic all around. So we ended up getting kind of close to the exit ramp from where you would get off the highway to go to my hotel. I was staying at the Excalibur, and I told the driver, you know what, just let me out here. I'll just take care of it from here. And ended up running up the exit ramp, running into my hotel, going to the room, throwing my bag on the bed, and then going back down and got there just in time to meet up with my friend at the start line. So,
oh my goodness. So, I don't even know where, like, I mean, for me, you know, I can't even come close to relating. Cause all I did was like the morning race for me, it was in my hometown. So like I ran and, you know, it's a smallish race. Not super crowded. So there's not a big, you know, traffic issue. Like you run, you come home, sit on the couch, you know, and it's in the fall. So you're watching some college football on a Saturday, like no big deal. And like you said, eating and hydrating, take a little nap. And then in the evening head over, it was over at Walt Disney World at one of the wine and dine races that was used to happen at night. And so head over there and go do, you know, go run the second race. But, you know, you said you had a chance to eat and rest and rehydrate, but I don't feel like you had quite the same, I feel like the odds were stacked a little more against you than they were for me.
Yeah. And I've told people that at the beginning of that race, I felt better than I had at any, you know, halfway point of any marathon I've ever run, because I had dry clothes, I was stretched out, I wasn't hungry or thirsty or anything. By about mile 9 or 10 into the race, I hit the biggest wall I've ever hit in my life, because it felt like, you know, by this point it was dark and I was still running, and it felt like I woke up in the morning and started running and just ran all day long. Like even the time I had in between races, somehow my mind like compressed that time down into nothing, and it just felt like I had never stopped running from the time I woke up.
Well, and I mean with the traffic issues and the running, that like you did do a little extra run. I don't know. It'd be funny to see how much extra you ended up doing that day because of that stuff.
Probably did an ultra actually.
Speaking of ultra, I wasn't planning on going here just yet, but and maybe even at all. But is an ultra something that's on your radar at all, or not so much?
It actually is. I don't have any specific plans for to do one coming up anytime soon, but that actually is something I'd like to say that I've done at least once. So,
gotcha. But yeah. I'm kind of in the same boat. I have a lot of folks that listen to the show that consistently pressure me towards you know, trying to try that first ultra, and I'm warmed up enough to the idea of that. I'll at some point, probably in the next, you know, year to 18 months, do a 50K. But I don't see myself going any farther than that. Like that's a solid ultra distance race, and that's good enough. I don't know about that 50 mile or even longer than that. That's just crazy stuff.
Right. There's actually a marathon. It's the Route 66 marathon in Tulsa, where the last mile of the course splits, and it goes through whatever the local university is, their University of Oklahoma or whatever. But you have a choice where you can either run straight and just go to the finish line, or you can do this little extra like 0.1 miles that goes through the middle of the university campus. And they call it the if you do that, you get an extra medal. And they say it's the shortest ultra ever because it's technically ran more than 26.2. So I've had a few people that have the same thing where people have been like, oh, you should do an ultra. They're great. So I was thinking about doing that one year and be like, see, I did an ultra.
Well, shoot, if that's what you're going to do for your ultra, just purposely not run the tangents, like purposely take the longest route around every corner you can go and be like, oh, see, 26.4. Like, I'm an ultra.
There you go. Yep.
Oh, Lord. How many states have you been to for your half marathons in the U.S. so far?
41.
41. And this may be an impossible question, and that's fine. You can give a couple different answers. But what are a couple of the places that you've been to that really stand out, whether it's for, you know, just a great race, or whether it's for, you know, natural beauty or a cool city, but maybe things that you wouldn't, places that you wouldn't have gone if it weren't for doing, you know, having this type of goal of running a race in every state.
Probably the biggest one that I would say that I would never have gone to if it wasn't for a race would be Birmingham, Alabama, which is the Mercedes Marathon. And I did that one basically because I needed a race in Alabama to run, but also because it's sponsored by Mercedes. The medals are these like Mercedes logo shaped, pretty cool looking bling medal. But I went there and I wasn't really expecting much from the city until I got there and realized that Birmingham is kind of going through this big renaissance where over the last 5 to 10 years, almost the entire city has been remodeled, and they've got some historic districts, but they've got a really nice modern, restaurant and entertainment area. There's a nice theater district. And I ended up saying, well, you know, even from being from Chicago, I was still impressed at how nice Birmingham was. So it ended up, that was a place. And the course was really nice too. And like, as I did the half for that, if I had done the full, it would have been a double loop. And I don't know that I would have cared to do another loop of the exact same course, but otherwise the course itself was beautiful. It goes through some of the old areas, through some of the newer areas. And, it ended up being that's one of the ones that I tell people all the time that, you know, you'll be surprised at how much you like this race. So
duly noted. I have a goal for all 50 states for the marathon, and I haven't done Alabama yet. So we'll see. Again, with that double loop, but if it's just one loop that you do twice, if it's a pretty much a half marathon loop, I think I've done races like that before. So I can stomach that, I think.
Yeah. Take a look at that one. And the nice thing is it's in, February, which is from Chicago, it's freezing in February, but going down there, the race, it was like in the mid 40s on race day. I mean, it was nice, comfortable for running, nice way to get away from the brutal cold up here. So
all right, keep that in mind. What of the states you haven't been to yet, what state are you most looking forward to?
So there's, let's see, Oregon and South Dakota are probably two of the bigger ones. I'm doing South Dakota later this year, which is the Crazy Horse Marathon. That starts, it's in the Black Hills, and it runs, it's near Mount Rushmore. It's supposed to be a really beautiful race. And then also, obviously, there's a few in the Northeast that I haven't done yet. So I haven't done Boston, which is one that I have planned, and maybe like New Hampshire, Vermont, that area.
With the Black Hills race, it sounds like that's got to be a smaller race, but maybe not. I don't know, because I don't know. Maybe there's not that many races in South Dakota, so all of them tend to be big. But probably, I imagine clearly, not a city race at all.
No, definitely not. And yeah, I think there's only about 2,000 runners that do that one, so it's a pretty small one. Most of the ones, the further west you go, until you hit like California and you know, Vegas, like that area, most of those are. Tend to be a couple thousand runners tops, or even just a few hundred, depending on where they are. So,
gotcha. Another thing that you've done that is of particular interest to me, in addition to all this traveling and some of the logistics and whatnot, a couple of books. You've written what, three or four books now?
Four.
Wow, that's four more than I've written, but certainly something that's on my list. Something I would like to do. What got you started with writing? And I believe they're all about running. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah. So they're, three of the four are, they're kind of like travel guides for runners, basically, where I I'll talk about the best races to do in a particular state. I've interviewed some of the race directors, found out some history about the races and some of the things that are interesting to look for on the course. And then just things to do while you're in town. For most people, you know, you're going to fly out maybe Thursday or Friday, and you're going to go to the expo, and you're going to go do the race, and you've only got a limited amount of time. So if you're only in town for like 2 days or whatever, what are some of the best things to do and see while you're there? And then I also included a number of travel tips for runners, things about like how to save money, how to save time, and anything else, because I get a lot of questions from people about, well, how do you travel all these different places and run, not completely go bankrupt? So I figured I'd write down all my ideas and share them with everyone. So,
well, let's, if you don't mind, I'd love to dive into that a little bit, because that's something that is something I'm trying to figure out. I'm still at the beginning stages. I'll be doing my fifth marathon. In the, actually before this, between the time that we're talking right now, between the time that this goes live, I'll have knocked California off of my list. But, you know, obviously if for anybody that's looking to even not do all of the states, but just to travel to a race, you know, to take a racecation type of thing, you know, sometimes you make the argument that running races locally can be expensive enough and kind of, you know, a little bit of a big pill to stomach sometimes on the budget. Traveling and going to all 50 states, if that's something that's on somebody's list, is takes that to the next level. So what are a couple of tips for saving a few bucks on the travel and everything associated with it, to still be able to go and do it and have an enjoyable experience and not feel like you're completely pinching every possible penny?
Sure. And some of them are actually more simple than people realize. So booking your flights, the timing of when you book your flight is pretty important to how much it's going to cost you. So if you book your flight way in advance, what ends up happening is that the airlines know that they haven't sold all the seats on their plane, but they have plenty of time, so they don't care if you pay more money. So they're going to keep their prices high. If you book it too close to the date, then they know you're scrambling to, you know, you probably don't have many choices left. So then they can really raise their prices. But about 3 to 5 weeks out before the actual day that you're going to fly is the ideal time to book a flight, because at that point, that's when the airlines start looking at how many seats they've sold on each flight and saying, okay, we've only sold half of this plane. We need to make sure that we can, you know, sell enough seats to make it, you know, to get our money for having the flight in the first place. So that's when they start coming out with all the discounts and lowering their rates a little bit to make sure that they sell enough seats on the plane. Booking your flights on a Saturday evening is actually the best time to book flights, because when airlines advertise discount rates, they're required to make those rates available a certain percentage of the time throughout the period of the ad, but it doesn't have to be the entire time. So you might see a billboard that says, you know, $99 from Chicago to Orlando, and then you go to on, you know, the American Airlines website or whatever it is to book the flight, and it's $250. What is this? It's because they can advertise that for, you know, a month or whatever, and they only, like I said, there's only a certain percentage of the time that the ad's running that they have to make that rate available, and typically that's Saturday night, because throughout whatever studies they've done over the years, the airlines know that Saturday night is when the fewest number of people are thinking about booking travel and flights and stuff, so that's when those rates will be available. Another one is clearing your browser cookies when you go to book a flight. So airlines know if I go to American's website and I look at rates, and then I go to United and I look at their rates, and then I say, ah, those are Americans, were better, and then maybe you'll go back and you'll see that the rates are actually higher. It's almost like a used car salesman going, you know, well, if you leave the lot, I can't give you this deal again. And you know, the truth is, yeah, you can, but
right.
But if they know you're just kind of shopping around and looking around, they'll give you higher rates. So if you clear your browser cookies, they won't know that you've been to their site before, and you a lot of times actually see lower rates when you're looking. So
how did you figure out these ninja tactics of shopping on a Saturday night and clearing your browser? Because I feel like I've probably gotten jobbed a dozen times by the airlines now that you're saying this stuff to me.
Right. So I used to work for a company that had our own internal travel department, and got to be pretty good friends with some of our travel agents, and they actually gave me a lot of these tips just based on their own knowledge of the industry. So it's worked out pretty well for me, and then some of it was just through my own experimentation over the years too. So
Gotcha. Wow. Well, all right. Duly noted. And I'm assuming probably one of the more common ones that if I know it, then it's probably everybody probably knows it. But try not to fly on the weekends if you can help it, because those are going to be more expensive, too.
Yeah. If you can book like a Thursday night through a Monday or something, mm-hmm. you're going to get a lot better than if you do Friday through Sunday, for sure.
Right. Right. Yeah. Wow, my mind's still kind of spinning from this whole when to the timing factor of it and the Saturday night thing. So I guess the next time I got a trip to plan, I'll be sitting around on a Saturday night, and that'll be instead of going out on a date, we'll be booking plane flights.
There you go. I got one more for you. For rental cars, a lot of people don't realize this. You can haggle with rental car agents. Mm. So my trip is definitely it's basically when I go to reserve my rental car online, I will reserve the cheapest possible car. So the, you know, $12.95 a day mm-hmm. economy car or whatever. And when you get to the rental car counter, typically they'll ask you, you know, do you want to upgrade? Do you want us to pay for your fuel? Do you want us to cover your insurance? Mm-hmm. And you can actually use some of those things as leverage. So yeah. Okay, fine. I'll buy the insurance if you give me an upgrade, or you can pay for the fuel, but I want you to cover the insurance too, or whatever you want to do. And eventually, you know, the biggest story I had on that was I went to Dallas, Texas, and I was driving from there to Oklahoma City for a race. And I ended up getting a Camaro for 5 days with the insurance and the gas paid for by the rental car company for $80.
Whoa.
And and it wasn't anything, I didn't do anything special other than just keep asking them for what I wanted until they finally agreed to give it to me. So.
Wow. And now my mind's spinning when it comes to rental car stuff. This is fantastic. You don't even need to be a runner to listen to this show. If you travel, this is an episode for you.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, it's good tips for anybody.
Goodness gracious. So you said, I think that like three of your four books were kind of this running and you know, different races and tips for that race and the city and travel tips, obviously. What's the fourth book about?
So the fourth book is actually my daughter co-wrote it with me. Mm. And it's about running with kids and you making training fun. So my daughter, Sarah, is she's actually going to be 12 in 2 weeks, but did her first 5K with me last year. And we were training and, you know, we trained together and I tried to figure out, you know, what can I do to make an 11-year-old excited about running? Mm-hmm. So I kind of went through the things of, you know, we put our training program together and I had her help me out with it and give her input on, you know, how far she thinks she can run on different days. And, you know, showed her how it's going to build up from, okay, maybe now when we started out, it was only a half mile. And, you know, over a period of 8 weeks, we went from running a half mile all the way up to being able to run a whole 5K. And then mm-hmm. she did the race. And we went together and went to the fancy shoe Nike store on Michigan Avenue in Chicago and had her pick out a nice pink pair of running shoes and stuff that, you know, that she would really like and make her excited. And so we kind of wrote this book together afterwards about how she trained and how we made it fun. And I think that's kind of important because one of the things that we saw after the race was someone else who she happens to know that was also her age, whose dad is a runner and they ran it together. And, you know, he's snapping at her about, oh, well, you know, you were hugging your corners too tight. You could have cut a couple minutes off of your time if you would have ran the tangents the way I told you to. And then, that's not the way that you're going to make your kids excited about running. And, you know, I want her to think of running or exercise, whatever kind of it is. If she wants to be a runner or if she wants to do something else, it's fine. But just think of being physically active as something that's fun and mm-hmm. something that you want to do long term. So it's kind of about how you can lay the foundation for that. And like I said, she actually helped me write the book and wrote a whole chapter of advice for kids her age that want to be runners at the end, too.
Wow. So is that then geared towards the parents, geared towards the kids, geared to read together?
Yeah, probably geared to read together, I would think.
Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. Keep that in the back of mind. I got a 2-year-old, so I got a little while before she's ready to be running. But I love that idea of just, you know, ways to make it fun, whether it's running or whether it's, you know, whatever, just having fun and being active and being healthy is important, to say the least.
Yeah, exactly. It is. And the younger they are, when you start doing that, the more it just becomes part of their lifestyle. And as they grow up, that's just kind of something that they'll think of doing. Mm-hmm. You know?
Definitely. with writing, I mean, between four books and a great blog, has writing always been something that that you've been interested in, or what's caused that itch to need to be scratched?
You know, it is something that I was always kind of interested in. And growing up, all the way going through school, I was consistently told by all my teachers that I was a really good writer. And I've got a job. I actually work in IT. And interestingly enough, one of the ways that I've been able to advance in my job pretty quickly is because I've been told I have really good communication skills, which mm-hmm. for people that are in technical fields isn't always as common. So the thought of writing a book never really occurred to me until after I had run a certain number of races and started to realize that I have all these stories about some cool races that I've done and you know, things that I've seen while I was traveling, and I was trying to think of a way to share them, but a way to share them that was more than just sharing my stories that people who don't know me are not going to necessarily care about. So that was why I kind of worked in some of the travel tips and some of the tips about if you're going to travel and do a race in, you know, in Las Cruces, New Mexico, where should you go eat? What should you go check out while you're there? And something that'll kind of add a little bit of value for other runners mm-hmm. too. And I wanted it to be a little different. I don't really talk a lot about specifically like training or anything in my books, because there's so many other books like that, that I figured mine would be, it would just get lost in the mix if right. I did that. So wanted a little bit of a nice little niche. No?
What is somebody who would like to one day write a book, and I've got a couple of ideas in my mind, but it's, you know, it's a matter of there's no sense getting started and trying to half-ass it when you got a dozen other things, plates that you're trying to spin. And I know I don't have the time to necessarily dedicate to writing a book right now, but what did you learn about writing a book for somebody who's maybe, you know, who has the goal of writing a book to make the process, I don't want to say easier, because I don't know that it's ever going to be quote unquote easy, but you know, what are a couple of headaches that can maybe be avoided that you learned maybe the hard way?
I think the biggest thing to learn is don't shortcut it. So what I originally thought I was going to end up doing with my first book was take a collection of blog posts that I had already written about all these different races in a, you know, specific geographic area of the US and combine them together, and voila, I would have a book. Mm-hmm. The problem is I did that, and then I started looking at it, and I started realizing that these are all things that I had written at different points of time with kind of a different, you know, mindset based on whatever else I had going on at the time or whatever. And it just didn't flow good. It just looked like a bunch of mishmash of different stories that were cobbled together that I wouldn't even want to read myself. So I ended up going through it and rewriting it multiple times. And the other tip that I would give you, which was kind of the next step for what I did, was went out and solicited a bunch of feedback from other people. So I actually had every chapter that I wrote about, I contacted the race directors for the races I was writing about and, you know, asked them, got some questions from them, or asked them some questions about what some of the best things to do. Like I said, kind of the history of the course, what people runners should be looking for, what they should look out for if there's a lot of hills or whatever. Mm. And then I asked them to help me edit the chapter that I wrote about their race. So kind of got them involved and kind of did this like crowdsourced editing where I had each chapter edited by a different person. And then I had someone that helped me edit the whole thing overall. So ended up working out pretty well.
Yeah, it seems like that's a great idea because, you know, you're writing about these races from your perspective. But I know there's been times that I've been, I don't know, frustrated, but maybe a little bit perturbed about certain aspects about some races. But, you know, in the back of my head, I at least hope that there was probably a reason, there's probably a method to the madness that, that the race directors would certainly know. So it's cool to be able to get their perspective on their race, because who's going to know it better than them, you know, to smooth things out.
Actually, interestingly enough, when we've been talking about double loop courses, the reason that the Mercedes Marathon is a double loop course was intentional, because it used to be they had a different course layout. They did the Olympic trials in Birmingham early 2000s, and the race directors changed the course to be double loop because that way spectators could see their favorite runner go by more than once. So same thing. Yeah, I never would have thought about that had I not contacted them and talked to them about it. So
I mean, like I said, who's going to know a race better than the race director? So you get the inside scoop. And if you're featuring their race, I'm sure they're happy to to go through that chapter and make sure that all of the, you know, the I's are dotted and T's are crossed, to make sure that it's a pretty fair and accurate representation of their race.
Right. Exactly.
So as we're getting kind of close to wrapping things up here, Tom, I'd love to ask a little bit deeper question, and obviously no right or wrong answer. But in the time that you've been running, how would you say that running has changed you as a person, as an individual?
Okay. So when I first started running was more something that I did to stay in shape or lose a few pounds or whatever.
Or impress the boss a little bit.
Impress the boss. Yeah, exactly. over the years, it's kind of become more of like the fabric of who I am, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So like, a lot of my friends now that I, you know, that I hang out with regularly are people that are other runners that maybe I met them at a race or met them, you know, through a running club or, a lot of the, you know, most people that talk to me, if they haven't seen me in a while, they'll ask me about what races I've done lately. What's my next race? What's, you know, what I've got coming up, what I'm training for. And training is just thinking, you know, part of my daily routine of when I wake up, it's, well, okay, I've got, you know, this many miles today to do today, or, okay, well, I guess today's a rest day, so I'm not going to run, whatever. It's just something that it's hard to not even think about. And if I wasn't running, I don't know what I would even be doing right now, really.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is the kind of mindset or the attitude that a lot of us have. You know, at first it started out as something that we did. And, now it's something that, whether you want to say that it's something that we are, that you know, that we need it, but it's certainly something that is no longer a task. It's no longer a chore, like, oh gosh, I have to run today. Like it's at least for me, I guess I'll only speak for myself, but it's like you said, it's a day that when you wake up and you're like, all right, this is what I get to run today. Like I look forward to those runs instead of being like, oh gosh, I gotta do this today. So it's definitely cool how those evolutions take place over time.
Yep. And, you know, it's funny because running's created a bunch of opportunities for me, too. So, I mean, there's the books, and from the books, I've actually had a few speaking opportunities mm-hmm. where I spoke at recent expos and did a thing with the North Face where I spoke at one of their events. But not only that, but even just in my regular day job, I've had times where maybe I've had a meeting with somebody that's a, you know, potential customer or potential business partner or whatever, and you find out that they're a runner, and the next thing you know, you're sitting there talking about races, and, you know, your work relationship with them becomes a lot more laid back because you have that thing in common too. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's one of the things I love about this show. I've never met a runner who, doesn't like to talk about running. So once right. you got that connection, you know, you always have something that you can fall back on, and probably days worth of stories that we could sit and tell together.
Yeah, exactly.
But in the interest of not taking setting a world record for the longest podcast interview ever, we'll go ahead and wrap this up. But obviously lots of other stories. And guys, again, check out Tom's books, check out his website, all kinds of great information and stories and recaps of his races and his experiences. Runsinplaces.com, Instagram and Twitter at TomRuns_262. And I have links to everything we talked about, some of the blog posts of the race recaps and things like that that we talked about as well at the show notes for today's episode. You can find it dizruns.com/297. So Tom, thank you so much for taking the time today. Thanks for sharing some of those great travel tips. Like I said, I can't wait to have the next race on the calendar that I can put those into effect for. But thanks for taking the time. Thanks for the chat, and all the best going forward for sure.
Thanks. Good luck to you too. Thanks for having me.
All right, guys, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation between Tom and myself. And as always, I'd love to know what you think. What stood out to you from our chat? What resonated with you the most? For me, I think that, I think you could probably tell while we were talking, my mind was blown by some of the travel hacks that Tom shared for us that are really just simple things. You know, and even if that means I got to be less exciting, although it's not like I go out on Saturday nights anyway. So clearly the next time I'm traveling for a race, or traveling just in general, I'll be looking on Saturday nights to try to see what kind of deals and steals I can get on an airline ticket. I mean, who would have thought, but I guess it's good to have some connections and get the inside scoop on some of those things. And then you can implement them into your personal life. And so, appreciate Tom sharing those tips. And if you've tried any of those things, or if you have other travel tips, I'd love to hear, you know, ways to save a few bucks and, you know, not without without nickel and diming, without skimping on stuff, but you know, are there ways, are there tips, tricks, hacks, things like that that you have? I'd love to hear about those as well. Or anything else, any other takeaways that you have from today's episode, let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns, shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com, or head over to the show notes for this episode, which you can find at DizRuns.com/297, and leave a comment, and that way others can benefit from your tips or your tricks or your takeaways as well. So, guys, thanks again for listening to today's episode. I appreciate it. Hope that you enjoyed it. And don't forget, if you're interested or finding out more about what coaching for runners, just in general, obviously it's talking about for me too, but you know, it's working with me, but just in general, what are some of the benefits of coaching? Head over to DizRuns.com/coaching and you know, just get the scoop. And if you have any questions, please let me know. Again, whether it's a general question or whether it's about something specific that I offer, I'm happy to answer it and allow you to make whatever decision you think is best for you. So with that, let's sign off for this thing for today. Again, thanks for listening. Have a great one. Hope that you enjoyed it, and look forward to talking to you guys again real soon. Take care, guys.